In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
One of the biggest mistakes that socialists make, and they are legion, but one of the biggest mistakes is that they firmly believe that people want someone else to run their lives and tell them what to do. Their next biggest mistake is to try to do that in America. America was founded on not taking orders from a tyrannical king. The Pilgrims, the Quakers, and other religious orders came here to leave taking orders from a king or a pope or an archbishop behind, to form a new life free of taking orders. Our founders came here where there was nothing, no cities, no sanitation, no industry, no businesses to deliver goods and fill up shops, no textile mills, not even an established food system, because they would rather start from scratch with nothing and no civilization than to be told what to believe, what to do, and how to do it. America exists because our ancestors refused to be told what to do by kings. And what's happening in 2020? We're being told what to do by people who think they're kings. America is not about cowering in your basement. America is about challenges. It's about solving challenges. We pushed west, not because it was easy, but because Oregonians wanted a freer way of life and a chance to make it for themselves. Once again, our forefathers did what their forefathers did, leave civilization behind, overcome obstacles and a dangerous trip to go where there was nothing, choosing that hard life and to build from scratch just to be free and make a better life for themselves, to choose and to make their own way in life. Yet here we are in the 21st century, and Democrats are determined to return us to the day of kings and royalty, where they will order and you will follow. It goes against everything that America was founded on. Freedom is in our blood. Liberty is who we are. This week's show is about defending our rights, but also about taking the fight to the government that is abandoning their responsibilities while taking away our rights. It's time to fight back. I'd like to welcome Kim Herman to the show. She is general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, an Atlanta-based nonprofit firm dedicated to advocating limited government, protecting American freedom, and defending individual liberties. Kim, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. You know, we absolutely love the work that you guys do there at Southeastern Legal Foundation. So, you know, to get warmed up, let's talk a little bit about the rise of the campus Gestapo. This is a new phenomenon of universities in the age of COVID. And in a letter to the University of North Georgia, Southeastern Legal told the university that the reporting form that they had for COVID-19 is represented, quote, a dangerous unconstitutional precedent insofar as it could be used to stifle free speech and to violate individual privacy of the university community members. For example, students could use the form to theoretically bar a controversial speaker from coming to the university. With a concern form at the student's fingertips, students wishing to prevent a controversial speaker or to stop student organizations from garnering interest in their cause can simply report members of that organization as symptomatic, the letter reads. It's not just the university, but couldn't the same approach be used to stop political gatherings in regular society?
It absolutely can. And, you know, just to take a step back here for a minute, we work with college students throughout the country through our 1A project, where we get to represent them in courts. We also get to educate them. And through that, we've made these really just great bonds and great relationships with them. And so when they see things like this happening on their campuses, they go ahead and give us a call and let us know. And so, you know, we're talking about the UNG form, but in reality, this is happening all across the country. To your point, it's happening first on our college campuses. And I think that it's because we've seen our college campuses throughout our country really turn into, they want to be the poster children for the cancel culture. They want to stop anyone who believes in freedom. They want to stop anyone who believes in the American way and capitalism from being able to really talk about that. And so, you know, what we're seeing is we're seeing these schools go out, have these forms where students can report other students for anything from a cough to a sneeze to behavior that could potentially transfer or transmit COVID, even if they don't have it. And through that, they can shut down their speech because those students can get investigated. And so we're seeing it start on our college campuses, but where does it end, right? Yeah. We're starting to see different states push different apps. If you have an iPhone or an Android phone, which we all do, go into your settings. There's a setting there that you can turn on where you can actually be traced, mm-hmm. and they can follow you along and see, you know, if you have, if you've been around anyone that has COVID, if you have COVID, and if you're going to go to political rallies or you're going to get out there and, you know, you're going to, you know, speak your rights and you're even going to go to election polls here in November, where does that bring us?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's scary stuff. I mean, this is exactly the same sort of thing that China does. They track all of their citizens, and in fact, in a lot of cases, you can't even get on a bus unless you have that tracking app on you. This sort of thing also happened not only at the University of North Georgia, but also at the University of Miami and Texas A&M. On these forums, is there any repercussions for false reporting or to limit reports from a single person?
At the majority of schools, no. There are a few schools where we've looked into their forms where we have students that we work with there, and they do note that if they're used in any malicious way or any way that would violate their student code of conduct, again, what does that mean? But those students could be punished. But the majority of these schools don't. In fact, a number of the schools are actually encouraging their students to report each other. If you go onto the University of Miami's website, there's a Canes for Canes kind of movement here, and they're asking people to really band together. And if you see people having off-campus parties, or if you see people having student organization meetings, to report them, because those are considered concerning behaviors. Those are actionable behaviors, and those students can be investigated. So I wish that we were seeing more of what you're talking about, but unfortunately we're only seeing that on a very few campuses where we're seeing the concern forms and kind of a band together, big brother feel. And I hate to use that analogy because I do feel like sometimes it's overused, but I can't think of a better situation where we really can kind of invoke that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it almost sounds like they're going to be offering Karen as a degree program. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll finish up with the universities and then get into constitutional rights that are under threat and some lawsuits maybe that ought to be happening. All that and more with Kimberly Herman of Southeast Legal Foundation. And welcome back. We're talking legal issues here on the iSpy Radio Show with dictator wannabes in the COVID era. We need to protect our rights. We're doing that with Kim Herman, who is general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, an Atlanta-based constitutional public interest law firm and policy center. You may know them as John Solomon's attorney for his freedom of information request when the government says, oh, no, we can't let people know what we really said or did. You know, before we get back into things, why is it that those FOIA requests can drag on for so long? I mean, after they've been ordered to release things. I mean, you know, I could understand back in the era of snail mail and typewriters, you'd have to root through files in the basement, but everything's electronic now. It seems like it should be just a matter of days and not months and months. Why does it take so long?
I agree with you. It should be a matter of days and not months. And in reality, it's really years. Like you said, we're fortunate enough to represent John Solomon, who I know your listeners are very familiar with and has been on your show a number of times in the last several years. And, you know, we were talking earlier about COVID and the COVID regulations and how that affects college campuses. But it's interesting because we have a number of FOIA lawsuits, both with John and without, and the government is now looking to COVID as their excuse to why they're taking so long. We have one case where we're seeking an email from the whistleblower, Eric Charmella, and they've acknowledged the existence of this email. They have to acknowledge it because it's actually in the Robert Mueller report. But they are saying because of COVID, they can't get it to us. We're having to go to these judges. We're having to waste judicial resources. We're having to waste our time, waste the public's time, waste the government's time just to try to get these documents, which they say exist. But because of COVID, they cannot walk into the building and hit send on an email.
Wow. Wow.
That's it's pretty astonishing.
Oh, it's absolutely astonishing. Okay, well, lots more we could talk about that on that. But, you know, in that last segment, we talked about the situation there at University of North Georgia and other universities that have been using COVID reporting forms that could be used to shut down free speech and by claiming people whose politics you don't like are showing signs of COVID, thereby forcing them into quarantine or even leaving campus. You know, universities for decades now have been petri dishes for anti-American, anti-constitutional issues. You mentioned that in some cases they appear to be encouraging people to report these group or people that may be having it. Do you think these universities could be purposefully pushing the limits to see what they can get away with? In other words, is there maybe a bit of malevolence there, or are they simply ignorant of the Constitution and our rights as Americans?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest. I think that you do have some of the colleges that are probably, they don't know how to handle COVID. But I think that the majority of them, even when we bring up to them issues of you know, constitutional violations, they don't necessarily care, right? Some of them are responding to us and modifying their forms. I do have to say University of North Georgia, in response to our letter, did modify their form to at least give a little bit more information on what they're going to do when they get one of these reports. But, you know, at the majority of the schools, I don't think that that's going to be the case. What we've seen over probably about the past decade, we've been working with college students specifically. And when we have a win, so let's say we are able to get a college to remove an unconstitutional policy, you know, one that maybe confines students to a very small area of the campus for free speech. What happens is a couple of years later, they come back and they do it again, and they do it again, and they do it again. And so they just keep on coming up with new ways to do the same thing. One year, it might be through a anti-discrimination policy. 2 years later, it might be through an anti-harassment policy. Now we're seeing bias response teams, which if you say anything that could offend anyone, they can report you, they can remain anonymous, and you can be investigated and potentially expelled because you offended someone. And so, you know, to your point, I do think that these become weaponized, and I do think it's just another tool in their attempt at whack-a-mole to really infringe on the students' First Amendment rights.
Well, so if these universities, you mentioned that you had sent a letter and that they did respond to you guys, the University of North Georgia did. For other universities, if they don't follow your guidelines to ensure constitutional rights are protected, is that something that you guys can sue over?
Potentially. We're working with a number of students in different states throughout our country to explore that, right? It's one of the issues that we tend to run into with a lot of these COVID regulations is how long are they going to last? Who can actually bring a lawsuit? A lot of times we have issues with college students where when they graduate, the case becomes moot and the court kicks it out. We actually just filed a brief yesterday in the Seventh Circuit where that has happened repeatedly. And we're trying to get the court to kind of come back together on this case and understand that if they don't hear these cases, these students are never going to get the relief that's needed and their First Amendment rights are never going to be protected. And so that's something that, you know, we're looking into. And we're hopeful that it doesn't have to get to that point. We've been very successful over the last 10 years to work with colleges and get them to understand because they know that we will sue if we need to. Mm. But we're always hopeful that we don't have to take it to that point and that we can get a faster resolution.
Mm. So here's an ugly thought. What's to stop somebody who is infected going to visit these groups they don't like and want to shut down? Oh, gee, you know, I was infected and I visited that group over there. That's kind of scary to think that that's what they could do.
It is. And I'll be perfectly honest. I don't know what exactly can be done about that other than the regulations and the rules that we're seeing. And so that's where we kind of have to find the balance, right? As to how far should these rules and regulations go? We've seen a number of schools that are requiring students to fill out a questionnaire every day before they come on campus or before they go to class as to whether or not they have symptoms. I know a number of lower schools are also using forms like this. And so, you know, forms like that where students are reporting about themselves solely, I think can be helpful. It's when they have the ability to report about others and infringe on their rights, that's where the problems really start to come in from a constitutional perspective.
Absolutely. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. I think what's happening at those universities is really a symptom, pardon the pun, of what's happening in the larger society where our constitutional rights are under threat. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Kimberly Herman of Southeastern Legal Foundation. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about our constitutional rights at stake under COVID-19, where the government thinks you have no rights as long as they declare it a health emergency. We're talking with the General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, Kimberly Herman. We had talked earlier about the situation at the University of North Georgia and some of these other universities and how they're dangerously close to letting these COVID tattlers use suspicion of COVID to potentially shut down speakers or groups that they just don't like. But I'd like to throw the net a little bit wider now and look at some of the dangerous aspects of what's happening under COVID and really threats to our rights. And since it's somewhat related to that tattling issue there, let's talk about contact tracing. This really bothers me. In fact, we were at an event not too long ago that they kind of surprised us at the door that in order to have the meeting, they had to agree with the state to keep a list of people that were there, which I didn't care for that at all. But contact tracing, in case people are not aware, this is where the state quizzes someone who is sick, and then they want to go track down people that they had come in contact with. I mean, there's no privacy, and you're essentially deemed guilty or at least infected before being proven innocent. What are your thoughts on contact tracing? Are there constitutional protections here at stake?
I think it's one of those areas where we don't really have all the answers right now, to be perfectly honest. But one of the things that we've been looking at with respect to it are going to be your Fourth Amendment rights. And what is the government going to do with this information? Are they going to come out to your house and try to cheek swab you and force you to get a test? Well, I can tell you definitively that if they were to do that, you have a very good and strong Fourth Amendment case on your hands.
I was just going to ask, what happens if they do that?
Yeah. We have some very good case precedent from the Supreme Court where they have held that a criminal arrested and charged with a serious crime can only be subjected to a DNA cheek swab if the charges are supported by probable cause. So you have to show the crimes occurred. What's your crime here that would give them any level of cause, let alone probable cause, to come in and force you to take a test or to do a cheek swab? Nothing. The bigger question that we have, we kind of take a step back even more from the contact tracing and say, what is it that they're going to do with this information? My guidance to anyone that calls us or anyone that we talk to on this issue is don't download these apps. Don't let it trace on your phone because you don't know what rights you could be giving up down the road from doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
Be very mindful. Now, it's another thing when you have, as we talked about before, a school that's asking you to take, kind of one of these self-reporting surveys of the day just for you to try to ensure that you can't come on and say infringe on somebody else's rights. As we mentioned, maybe by shutting their speech down by coming into a meeting of theirs and trying to infect people. But this is the whole different story when you're talking about forcing somebody to take a cheek swab or to take a test.
So if you
very
say
troubling.
If you say no, what can the state do at that point?
What can the state do at that point? Again, that remains to be seen as to what they're going to try to do. So that, I think that's really the bigger question. It's not a matter of what they can do, because the problem is that the majority of these states that are doing this think that they can do anything.
Yes.
And so they're going to try to take it to the absolute furthest extent that they possibly can, which is, again, why I would say my response would be, what right do you have to infringe on my bodily rights? What right do you have to ask where I have been? It's the same goes for these mask mandates that we've been talking about. You know, I've watching the convention this week, you can see people calling for mandatory masks that you have to wear outside at all times for the next 3 to 4 months. You know, where does it end Yes. And where is it helpful, and where does your rights end? And I'll tell you, that's something that we're talking about with attorneys, our colleagues at, you know, Heritage Foundation, at Federalist Society. We're speaking with them about this on a weekly basis to try to figure out what can we do to stop these infringements.
Well, in terms of these swabs, I mean, that really opens a dangerous door, because now if they get a swab of, you know, your cheek stuff, it's not just they can scan for viruses, but now if they wanted to, guess what? They've got a sample of your DNA.
You're exactly right. And again, you mentioned earlier in our conversation about how it's starting to look a little bit more like China, right? How in China they will track you. We saw out, I believe it was out in Oakland this past week, where they wanted students to actually wear a physical device on them, a health device at all times, to trace them where they were going. Now, fortunately, there was public outcry for that. I wish there was more public outcry for some of these other things that we're seeing. But I also think that it's because people have become so, they become kind of, brainwashed is definitely not the right word, but you become conditioned, right? They're taking a page kind of out of Saul Alinsky's playbook, and they're conditioning everyone to, first you wear the mask, then you have the contact tracing, then you have the cheek swab, then they have your DNA. Where does it end?
Right.
And that's where groups like us can come in, and we can say, no, that will violate your Fourth Amendment rights. You don't have to do that. Or you need to be aware of that and stand up for that, and we can stand up for that for you. It's really a privilege to be able to stand up for people's rights like this.
Yeah, well, you guys do awesome work.
I wish we didn't have to, but...
Exactly. You know, if we all respected if we all actually respected and believed in our rights, we wouldn't need you guys quite so much, but we just love the work that you guys
right.
do there. In about a minute and a half or so, we've got these endless executive orders. So apparently in a COVID world, if you want to be a dictator... All you need to do is declare a health emergency, and you've got limitless power for an unlimited amount of time. Have socialists discovered the Achilles heel in our Constitution and statutory law?
I would like to say no, but quite possibly. We're seeing the majority of the cases that have been brought have been thrown out. There have been a few wins with respect to social distancing, and, you know, being able to have church services and things like that. We've also seen a number of losses on that front. And it really is just power gone wild. I feel like I'm fortunate to live in a jurisdiction where our mayor actually came out and said, I can do this, but I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. Now, I debate whether or not he can do this. But it's really rare to be able to find those in executive power that are willing to, you know, not grab onto it and to abuse those rights. But, you know, again, for the past 4 years, we've been fairly fortunate from a federal perspective. But you look at the 8 years prior to that, right? We had things that we dealt with at SLF, like the Clean Air Act and WOTUS and, you name it. And it was a constant fight against executive power. And that has just trickled down. They saw that if you have a pen and a phone, you can do whatever you want. And so why aren't the governors, of course, are now going to do that in those states where they want to try to grab that power. And this is a perfect opportunity for them to try to do that.
Yeah, sure seems it. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Come back, we'll have more with Kim Herman of Southeastern Legal Foundation. We'll be talking about social distancing, shutting down businesses, and lots more. And welcome back. It's all about defending freedoms and fighting back against a government determined to take away your rights while grabbing more power for themselves. We're honored to be talking with Kimberly Herman. Today, she is the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, a nonprofit firm that is dedicated to advocating for a limited government, protecting American freedoms, and defending individual liberties. That makes them a hero in our book. Their website is slfliberty.org. If you'd like to go visit them, find out a little bit more. And you know, during the break there, we were talking about some of these mandates and whatnot that the governors of various states have pushed through here in Oregon. She has gone all in for social distancing and masks, and theoretically there are some protections for people that have health, various health issues. And she says, well, you're not really supposed to ask and so on. But then that's what she says publicly. But on the backside, She'll then go in and use OSHA and I think OLCC, which is the liquor division, to go in and threaten these businesses that don't comply. In fact, I was having a discussion with the manager not too long ago who says that they have been told by OSHA that they cannot allow people in if they have health conditions and aren't wearing masks. And he even told me that per OSHA, they will be fined $10,000 per violator. And so they as a business, they can't afford that. And so they're telling people they just can't come in, even though they're supposed to be making allowances. They haven't been. So how do these governors get away with these kinds of rules about social distancing and masks and threatening fines or jail time if you're just trying to go to the store and provide for yourself?
They get away with it because they make everyone so scared that they're going to get bad press if they go out there and they challenge these. I mean, from a real perspective, that is really what happens. And they don't necessarily always follow through. And so until we have that charge, until we have that, you know, fine being imposed, it's hard to challenge these rules. It's hard to challenge a theoretical harm, right? And so if they go in and let's say, you know, I own ABC Liquor Store and I take a stand and I say, no, I'm not going to require that of my patrons because I think that's unconstitutional. I don't think that I have the right to tell them to do that. They can make a choice about that because we're all adults here. And then they come in and they get fined. Well, then you have a potential challenge, right? And that's where groups like us can get involved and actually go in and take the case and talk to them and you know, fight for their rights. But a lot of times, again, what we see this mask issue as being is really just kind of a gateway. It's a way to say, if we can control them and make them have everyone wear masks, then what else can we control?
Exactly.
And it comes back to that continuous government overreach is you give them a little bit of an inch, which is really what we're doing with these mask rules, and then they're going to take a mile. And we're seeing that happen in different states at different levels. And I found that really interesting during the past 5 months to see federalism at work in our country and see how some states can reopen and let people make choices for themselves and how other states have to get in there and tell everyone exactly what they need to be doing because they're the, you know, ever important right guidance on that. And, you know, we've sent a number of demand letters and we've had a few successes with a number of these regulations that have put in place, especially early on during COVID, especially with property rights, because in the beginning it wasn't masks. It was that you can't travel and that you can't enter into certain jurisdictions and you can't come into our city because you may have COVID. And that was an absolute direct violation on constitutional rights, especially for people that owned property in those jurisdictions. And so fortunately, without a whole lot of pressure and without having to bring lawsuits, we were able to very kindly but strongly let them know that they couldn't do that. And we had that out in Colorado. We had it in North Carolina and a number of other locations.
Yeah, and they're threatening possible quarantines here in Oregon as well. You had mentioned earlier that it's difficult to argue these theoretical harm cases. But isn't that essentially what the governors are doing? Is they're saying, theoretically, if we mandate these masks on everybody, then theoretically we could lower the curve, we could fight COVID and everything. But nobody knows. In fact, you mentioned some states stayed open. South Dakota stayed open. They didn't enforce these masks, and yet their cases are lower than most of the ones that did. So how can they get away with theoretical harm, and yet we as citizens can't?
It's not a matter of whether they can get away with it. I think it's a lot of a matter of what is the American public willing to let them get away with. You know, you bring these cases and then it becomes, and not to get too legalese at all, you know, with your listeners, because that's never too much fun for me to throw around legal terms. But, you know, you get into this battle of the experts in those types of cases. And by the time that you litigate them, they're moot. By the time that you can actually get a court ruling, they've already changed the policy. They've already changed the rule. Same thing that we see on our college campuses that we talked about with respect to their speech codes and their speech policies. You challenge it, they change it, give it a different name, change a few words, and your case gets kicked out. They've become quite intelligent with respect to that. And so on the other end, we have to become really smart into how we challenge these. And a lot of it is educating the public, right? Part of what we do is not just litigate, right? That at heart, my heart, I'm a litigator. At our heart, that's what we love to do as lawyers. But it's really about educating the public about what their rights are. What are your Fourth Amendment rights? If somebody comes up to you and says, "I'm going to take a cheek swab," you can say no. What gives you the right to do that? Show me your warrant, right? I mean, I'm taking it a little bit to an extreme there. But unfortunately, we live in extreme times right now. And you've got the college campuses that are asking everyone to report each other and tattle on each other. You've even got states that are asking people to tattle on each other.
Yeah, we had that.
Concern forms are not limited to college campuses.
Yeah, we had that early on in Oregon, that they were encouraging people to take photographs of people and to turn other people in. And it was really ugly that you've got people turning, literally turning other people on, turning in people. It was just astonishing. You mentioned that you have the Fourth Amendment right to say no to a swab. Do you have that same right to say no to a mask?
We will see. I hate to say we will see, right? It's the ever-ending answer that nobody likes to hear from an attorney. But I would say if you don't want to wear a mask, it is worth challenging, right? Now, going into a private business, that's a different story. And I think that's where the line becomes blurred a little bit. You know, is your local supermarket requiring you to wear a mask to come in? Or is it the government that's requiring you to wear a mask before you go anywhere? Very different there, right? Yeah. Because you're talking about private property and private entities. And in reality, they have constitutional, rights that are inherent in their own private property. But is it the government that's requiring you to do that? That's where the question comes into play. And I say, if the government is requiring you to do it, it's no different than any of these other rules that we've talked about. Yeah. Because your First Amendment, your Fourth Amendment, the Constitution applies. And government is going to always try to overreach, unfortunately.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't mean to sound cynical, but you know that. Your listeners know that, right? You talk about it on, I think, every show that you have, it probably comes up.
Yep.
And so it's a matter of doing what we can to stop the government from overreaching and letting private citizens make their own decisions.
Absolutely. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming up, what about forced mandatory vaccinations? We'll talk about that next with Kimberly Herman of Southeastern Legal Foundation. Kimberly Herman is General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, an Atlanta-based constitutional public interest law firm and policy center that fights big government and defends individual freedoms. The Southeastern Legal Foundation website is slfliberty.org if you'd like to find out more about them and their important work. So let's talk a little bit about these forced vaccinations. This came to light, it's been kind of hanging out there, but Alan Dershowitz said about a couple months ago that there is established case law on this and that during a health crisis that you have no constitutional rights. And this is a quote from his podcast on the issue. Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally drag you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm. This is genuinely concerning. So let's start first, though, with the whole constitutional and case law aspects. When case law runs afoul of the Constitution, which one wins out?
That's where you bring new lawsuits to try to get the case law changed. And that's where, honestly, that is why we have public interest law firms like Southeastern Legal Foundation and the other ones, out there that are our friends. That's why you have policy think tanks like Heritage Foundation and Leadership Institute to bring these issues out and to challenge it. Because unfortunately, when we have bad case law, the only way to get it changed is to bring new cases and convince the justices that the prior law or the prior cases were wrong. And that takes time. So when you're in a situation like this with COVID, it is challenging to get that done fast enough, because you have to work your way up through the court system. And so that's where it's really important that we see, you know, state legislatures get involved and keep the government from being able to do this, right? Like, we've talked a lot about these executive orders and the executive overreach. We need our congressmen and congresswomen, and we need our state representatives and our state legislatures to hopefully get involved to protect our rights here. And we've all got to get out and talk about that issue more, and just kind of bring it back as to what is it that we're really here for. And it's to keep the government from overreaching and from literally holding you down and putting a needle in your arm.
I mean, just the image of that you've got no means to say no, that's really terribly frightening to think that that's, I mean, if that's true. I mean, is he right that you have no constitutional right to not wear a mask, or no constitutional right to refuse a vaccine?
There's definitely case law out there to support what he is saying. But again, I would argue that you have a constitutional right in your own body, and that unless the government can show really good cause for requiring those things and requiring the mask and requiring the vaccination, they can't just do it. They actually do have to show that there's a reason for it. And so they're going to have to go out there and show why the vaccination would help. They're going to have to go out there and show why the mask would help. And go out there and have those studies and have the medical experts. They can't just do it from a constitutional perspective without any evidence and any proof.
Well, it is rather odd that the left, which seems to be mainly in favor right now of forced vaccinations, should there be one that's developed, that they're saying that you essentially don't have a right to your body, when that was their whole argument for abortion. They seem to have gone out the window on that one. In terms of, though, being able to demonstrate the efficiency of these vaccines, I mean, is that all just going to be based on statistical models? And also, I don't really understand, you know, I tend to be in favor of vaccines that are established, but these new ones, you know, I would be really leery about some of the stuff that we're injecting into our bodies. How would they demonstrate the need for these things? Is it simply these statistical models that drove all of this to begin with?
That's a great question. It becomes a battle of the experts, just like it would in any lawsuit, right? And so here we're not necessarily talking about a lawsuit, but we're talking about, you know, what does the government have to show in order to show that they have a basis behind a law or a basis behind a regulation? And, you know, it's going to end up in the court. So, and that's where I come back with the medical experts. And so I can tell you right now, that, and you know this and your listeners know this, that if the federal government or a state is going to sit there and require you to wear masks at all times, no matter what, or require you to get a vaccination, you know, that has not been properly tested, right? There's a difference from how we look at it. There's a difference between, say, you know, a chickenpox vaccine that's been around, or an MMR, you know, vaccine that's been around, and a brand new vaccine that you're actually concerned could put you more at risk. And so you're going to have the scientific evidence there, just like you would in any lawsuit or in any case that's brought. Because I can guarantee you that if we do see more of this, we're going to see more lawsuits popping up. You know, it's our obligation to make sure that the government stays within their constitutional bounds, and to make sure that they don't, you know, abuse that and infringe on everyone's rights. And the only way that we can do that is by trying to challenge these and change precedent as we go on.
Well, I've never quite understood the argument from the people that are either that they're very pro-vaccine, because, you know, out here in Oregon, we've got a segment of the population that is very anti-vaccine. Well, okay, so if you're pro-vaccine, if you're vaccinated, why are you worried if someone else isn't? Doesn't your vaccine protect you? And if not, why did you get it? There just seems to be a common sense thing there at issue. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming back, we'll be looking at some lawsuits that maybe ought to be happening. Stay with us. Back. We're wrapping up our discussion now about defending individual rights against the government and public entities like universities that have forgotten that we left kings behind when we left England in 1776. using health emergencies to seize power. Kimberly Herman is general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. Their website is slfliberty.org, if you'd like to go visit them. And they do just that, fighting for limited government, protecting American freedoms, and defending individual liberties. And so, no offense intended, but lawyers are pretty much known for suing at the drop of a hat, or if you like, a drop of your coffee in your lap. So where are the lawyers in all of this? I'm a little surprised, really, that a lot of them seem to be silent for some potential class action lawsuits that are out there. Does it surprise you that we're not seeing more of those?
You know, in the beginning, it surprised me a little bit, especially since, you know, we jumped into action, as I mentioned, on a number of property rights issues when certain cities and certain counties weren't allowing property owners to even enter into their jurisdiction and to enter into their property. And we jumped on that right away at SLS. But then we started to see a lull. And I think that the reason why is because the jurisdictions keep changing the rules. And so it's really challenging to kind of ramp up a lawsuit and then have it mooted out right away, and then you start over. And I'll be honest, the left and a lot of the states that are having these crazy regulations and a lot of these schools that have these crazy rules and tattletale reporting, they know that, right? They're onto it. And so I think that that's part of it. I think the other part is some people out there might be a little bit scared of retribution. We live in a world where everyone's really quick to judge and everyone's really quick to point fingers. And so it's harder, I think, to find attorneys that are willing to kind of stand up for these rights when you have a health issue at stake. But what we've learned by talking to the students on these college campuses to kind of bring it back, you know, to the First Amendment issues with that come up with COVID and the Fourth Amendment issues, is that these regulations and these rules are not necessarily being used to protect everyone. They're not always thought through. And so if you have rules and you have processes in place that actually do protect people and they're really well thought through and they have backing and they can be substantiated, that's one thing. It's another thing to go out there and just say, report everyone. Tell us what everyone's doing. Tattle on everyone. Tell this state. And then let us take care of it. Let us tell them that they have to wear masks. Let us tell them that they have to do, you know, X, Y, Z before they can come onto our campus or come into our state, or they can't even come into our state. It's a whole other thing to do that. And so I think that as we start to kind of come out of the other end of this now, we're going to see more of those lawsuits. And I can tell you, we haven't had to bring any lawsuits. We've had quite a bit of success by going and pointing out these constitutional violations and, to be honest, threatening to sue. We have a lot of people that come to us. They can come to us through our website, slfliberty.org, or follow us on Twitter with a lot of the very same questions and things that we've been talking about today. And we can either help guide them or we can represent them to make the changes without having to bring a lawsuit. And so I think that, you know, the advocacy is out there. It's definitely out there from SLF and a number of the groups that we work with as partners. It's just that you might not see it in the headlines because it's, well, we all know what a lot of the headlines are taken by and who's kind of owning those and the misinformation that's out there. So,
well,
unfortunately, I think that that's just taking the day.
In terms of some potential massive class action lawsuits, I think there's one for mask wearing. I've talked with people that are forced to wear these things for 10 hours a day. They've got massive headaches. All sorts of other health care issues are creeping up. I've seen people that have reported that they've come down with thrush. They've got skin issues going on. There's mildew and all sorts of things that are arising from this mask wearing. So if the government mandates the mask and orders you to wear them, shouldn't they be liable for that if there are some resulting health problems?
They should be liable for that. And I think that time will prove that. And I think unfortunately, it's one of those things where I just don't think we're going to get an immediate answer. But I think that it's important that people take note of that. And I think that it's important that the governments take note of that. The problem that we have is that the people who are in power today hopefully in the states where there's mask mandates, you know, might hopefully won't continue to be in power there. And hopefully we can get rid of the mask mandates through the democratic process. These things take time. And again, I hate that is the answer with when you're dealing with medical issues, but when you're talking about the constitutional issues, those are things that can be addressed today. Yeah. Right. And so, yes, the class action lawsuits, there's always going to be class action lawsuits that are brought. Those are always yet to come. Yeah. But we can certainly address the constitutional issues today. And that's what groups like SLF can help our citizens do.
Well, I certainly think we're going to see a whole bunch of these things on the other side of that, like you mentioned. In terms of other lawsuits, what about for cities that are choosing not to fund the police? That are not protecting businesses or the people in those businesses. Really, the number one job of government is to protect people, but they're essentially admitting that they're abandoning that. Is there some lawsuit there?
Yes, and I think we've seen a number of those that have popped up. We've seen a number of those in cities like Chicago and out west, up in Seattle. And I think we're going to see a lot more of those. Those are going to have to work their way through the system. But, defunding the police is an absurd concept, in my personal opinion. And it's not about the right to protest. That's not what we're talking about here. We're so far outside of the First Amendment when we're talking about what's happening in these cities, that it's actually astonishing. And it's an embarrassment to our Constitution that people are trying to hide behind that.
Oh,
that is not what's at play. We're talking about, pure violence. So.
Yep, absolutely. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock. Kimberly Herman, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. It was great to talk to you and your listeners today.
Southeastern Legal Foundation's website, again, is slfliberty.org. That's slfliberty.org. You know, there's a doctor in the Willamette Valley. We follow each other on Twitter. And he said it's been 6 months since he last treated a COVID patient. But since then, he's treated lots of depression. People contemplated suicide, divorce, and plenty of other problems all related to the lockdown orders. We predicted here on iSpy that there will be a spike in health problems due to the masks. Well, that same doctor also said that he's treated people with mask-related problems. Headaches, depression, skin issues, respiratory issues, and plenty of others. The masks are causing problems in people who don't have COVID. As Kim Herman said, if the state ordered you to wear them, then they should be liable for problems as a result of that order. If you're experiencing problems, document it and contact your doctor. Doing so becomes evidence. And if you've been harassed by government workers, if you own a business and you're being harassed, don't just take it. Contact people like Southeastern Legal Foundation. It's time to stand up for your freedoms and liberties, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.